Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. I have less than a third of an acre.
And I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden on several acres out in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening, and we want others to love it, too.
Yes, we do, and we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Dee, and how are you today?
I am great today. I mean, we had a heck of a time getting this thing started, but I am great.
I am good, too, and the weather is very nice. It's those beautiful September days.
Yep.
Blue skies. There's nothing like the sapphire blue skies of September, is there?
No, there's not. And so we're recording this on a Tuesday instead of our usual Monday, and a giant cold front is coming down from the Arctic, and it's going to hit Oklahoma, but is it going to hit you guys in Indiana?
You know, I don't think so. I think our temperatures are supposed to be pretty seasonable, but I'm hearing rumors of snow in the Rockies and down into New Mexico.
There's snow in the panhandle tonight of Oklahoma. That's how far down this thing is going. And today, well, yesterday was high 90s, and then today is supposed to be mid 80s.
So that's crazy.
You just never know. It's that time of year, and I'm excited that I don't live anywhere where there's fires. So shout out to the poor people of California.
God love exactly. Them. I was on a Zoom with a call from a couple of people that were in California, and they said it was pretty miserable.
I'm so sorry. They are really getting the hot weather and the winds and everything else. Let's hope it gets cooled down for them.
Right.
So what's going on in your garden?
Well, you know, not to take people into more calamities, but my honey locust tree has mimosa webworms, Dee.
Okay, I have a question about this, and I didn't go look it up because I was like, I've never heard them called mimosa webworms. Are those a particular variety of webworm, or is it the same webworms that all of us see in the middle of the United States?
You know what? I don't know. It's a particular variety, and I looked up webworms on honey locusts, and it said they're mimosa. And the good news is if we have a seasonable winter, they are not likely to survive the winter. But I noticed in the neighbor's tree across the street and then around the corner, the tips of the branches, like all the leaves were dead, and that's where they've been feeding, and then they have their little webs. And these trees are too big to try to knock the things out. So,
right.
And too big to spray. So you just have to let nature take its course. I don't think it'll kill the tree.
Yeah, I know if it were closer to the ground, you could just pierce the web and pull it out of the tree, but it's not. We have the same thing happen here with elm trees in some years. We don't always have it, but sometimes we do.
So these mimosa webworms, they're about the size and shape of a grain of white rice.
Ew.
And I had gone outside last week sometime. It's like there was all these webs. I kept getting caught in webs, and I thought maybe it's spiders. And then I came in, and there were these mimosa webworms. There were a couple of them crawling near me, and I thought that's what that was. They were hanging down. So they came in the house with me.
How special for you.
It is special. Other than that, things are, I will say, seasonable and on the dry side. But tell me about your garden.
Things are pretty seasonable and a little bit on the dry side, but not like a normal Oklahoma late summer, early fall. Lots of monarchs. It is all the news in Oklahoma because, as you know, we're on the flight path. And
yes,
we are not actually seeing the big group that comes through and goes down to Mexico yet. There was a big article in the Tulsa World, which Tulsa is about an hour and a half north and east of me, but I go there a lot. And a lot of my friends live up there that also do monarch work. And I'm just seeing tons of eggs from the ones that are already here. So I cannot express how many eggs we're seeing. And some of us are raising monarch butterflies, but if you're going to raise monarch butterflies, go on one of the monarch groups on Facebook and learn a little bit, because it's not complicated, but you're trying to keep them from getting various diseases and stuff. The other thing is, I don't know what I was going to say about that. I gave some milkweed to a lady that I know on one of the groups. she found even more eggs. We just need to all remember that female monarchs lay a lot more eggs than ever will be butterflies. That's just nature. Right.
That is nature.
The eggs are eaten by spiders and everything else, and you just can't get too upset about it.
Don't get too emotionally attached to all the eggs, right?
Right. Don't get that. Yeah, I don't get emotionally attached until they're in the chrysalis stage.
Oh, okay.
And then I try not to get too emotional about them then.
No naming them. No giving them names.
I never name them. No, because they're too fragile. So anyway, and also it was my birthday yesterday, and over the weekend I made gluten-free biscuits, which I rarely eat, and I ate them with my honeybee's honey, and I have the recipe, and by the time this podcast, I put the recipe on my blog, and we will have a link.
All right, and I will make sure the link gets into the show notes.
Thank you.
So let's
that.
Move on. So we commissioned ourselves via a reader last week, and it was Erica from Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and she wanted to know our suggestions of flowers to represent her kids who've moved away, and she wants to connect to them through flowers and maybe share them over time.
Right. Hello, Erica. Thanks for the question. I like it. It was kind of a commission,
yes.
wasn't it?
So you came up with a huge, big list. My suggestions are a little, I'll say, tamer. But tell us what you thought of.
Oh, I think you should go first.
All right, I'll go first. So I'm going old school, and I'll say you can't go wrong with some of the old-fashioned perennials, like the old-fashioned hostas that bloom in August and September, and they have a beautiful scent.
Right. They bloom in July here, but Pennsylvania should be similar to you.
Easy to dig and divide and pass along. I also said peonies for the spring, also easy to dig and divide in the fall. I would go with some columbine, and I would pick a variety called Blue Tower and or Pink Tower, which are double flowering. They are not native. They're not the native. But they will self-sow enough that you could end up with seedlings to share with everybody, but they're not obnoxious because they're easy to prick out.
These are all good suggestions for y'all's part of the world. I will say columbines in Oklahoma are iffy as a perennial. They make great annuals. They come back, some years they don't.
I think they would do well in Pennsylvania.
I do.
Also suggest for the fall, the New England asters, they will self-sow and are easy to share. And then I saw that you had listed an annual, so I thought, well, I'm going to list an annual too. And I would suggest zinnias because you can collect the seeds off your zinnias and then you can share those. And my brother-in-law replants his zinnia seeds year in and year out. So that's another way you could share your garden.
That would be a really nice way to share your garden. So I got a little more specific because I have four kids. And
that's
I thought about my kids and I thought about what I would do. So the first thing I chose was an annual instead of a perennial. And it's sunflowers.
Rule breaker.
That's me. That's me. I'm a rebel all the way. But I thought of mammoth sunflowers for several reasons. My one daughter, Megan, really loves yellow. Okay. It's her favorite color. She had a yellow car for a while. And so I thought about her. She also loves sunflowers specifically because of Sharon Lovejoy's Sunflower House's book. We make Megan a sunflower house. And I thought, if Erica's kids are grown up and maybe they're going to have kids, this would be a good suggestion. So that's that one. All right. And then I thought about Bright Eyes Phlox Paniculata because I think all happy children have bright eyes.
They do.
And I think about children whenever I see my Bright Eyes Phlox. It's easy to grow. It'll do well in her climate, my climate, pretty much any climate almost. Pollinators love it. It attracts so many different types of butterflies. And most people like butterflies. And for my son, I thought of Hot Rod Switchgrass because he loves cars. My husband loves cars. I love cars. Switchgrass is a native grass to the United States. And I love the title Hot Rod. And one of the reasons it's called Hot Rod is because it turns red in the fall, which would look great with your asters.
It would look marvelous.
And then for my daughter, Claire, who's my youngest, I've always planted plants with her name, like Claire de Lune clematis. So that seems kind of specific to her. But I was thinking if one of Erica's kids had a name that was in a plant, that's another way to say, right, hey, I thought of this specifically for you. And then for our daughter, Ashley, who's our oldest daughter who loves horses, I would not plant equisetum, which is horsetail. Horsetail is invasive. And so it's invasive almost everywhere. So instead, for her, I would just plant a rose. And I read years and years ago that Mike Shoup, who owned Antique Rose Emporium, he grew scented roses and had his children smell them so that he would always be remembered. So I thought of a great scented rose that doesn't have prickles, which we all call thorns, but technically they're prickles, is Rosa Zephyrine Druin. So for Ashley, I would plant a rose. And if it were a younger child, I would plant a rose without prickles because, and I would put that like on an arbor. In fact, I did do this. We have pictures of my kids when Zephyrine grew in our garden.
Those are great suggestions.
Zephyrine unfortunately got rose rosette, so she doesn't live here anymore. What were you saying?
Those were great suggestions. Can I add two more that I thought of?
Okay, cool.
So these are in the category of they're shareable.
Of them,
and scented. One of them would be Lily of the Valley, which you can't grow very well, but would grow very well in Pennsylvania in a semi-shaded location. And it would be easy to dig and divide clumps and share those with her kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought of one other, old-fashioned irises.
Yeah.
And I would say irises and daylilies. If you're going for a name and you're looking for somebody's name, if you go through those databases that they have online, you could find all kinds of irises and daylilies with various names in them, and that would spur maybe another bunch of plants you could put in the garden.
Right, and Bright Eyes Phlox is also another one that is very shareable, as is the phlox that is just pinky purple.
Yes,
that one is real easy too. And they're both scented also, and they grow really well in the summer with those daylilies, hostas. Lily of the Valley blooms early, so I can grow
it. Well, I think that's good. I think we did a marvelous job with this garden commission, and so at the end of this episode, we will have another assignment.
Cool. And if anybody thinks of one they want to send us, just send it to thegardenangelists@gmail.com.
Excellent. So we have a very unusual bunch of quotes this week.
Yes, not from a gardener.
No. So I'm going to read the first one and then you can explain.
Okay.
I believe that people should take pride in what they do, even if it is scorned or misunderstood by the public at large. By Tony Hawk.
And for those who don't know,
who's Tony Hawk?
Tony Hawk is a skateboarder extraordinaire, and I would say he's probably one of the most famous skateboarders out there. He's about my age. He's in his 50s. He's in much better shape than I am. And the reason we chose these, my youngest daughter, Claire, is a skateboarder. She loves to skateboard. And we were watching a master class on skateboarding, and in it, Tony Hawk did, I think it's our third quote. And I thought, oh my gosh, that could so apply to gardening. And then you went and found two more quotes by Tony Hawk. Because Tony Hawk became really good at his craft by practice, practice, practice. And how do you become a good gardener?
Plant.
And practice,
practice, practice, practice.
Yeah. And water. Don't forget to water your plants.
And weed.
Then, yeah, exactly.
And prune properly.
Yeah, pruning's later. I would start with the weeding and the planting and the watering first. But
yeah.
I also think people are misunderstand gardeners a lot. But that fits into our flower topic of the week.
So our flower topic of the week was dividing perennials. And it is the time to dig and divide a lot of the perennials. Can we say free plants?
Free plants.
So they don't cost anything except some time to dig them up. And it's a great time to look and say where things are overgrown or crowded out and then dig those up, break them up into new plants, and then spread them out or give them to friends, give them to your kids, whatever you want to do. But a lot of people are so afraid to dig up a perennial and divide it, and they shouldn't be afraid.
No, don't be afraid. In fact, it's good for the perennial because eventually perennials die out in the middle because they use up
some
all their
do.
Energy. Well, not that's true. Not all of them. Daylilies don't do that. But grasses, I think perennial grasses are a great example of that because almost every perennial grass I have dies out in the middle. So you can either dig it up and divide it, or you can pull out the middle part and put in some, you know, some good stuff to make it better.
And then, you know, like the New England asters, they tend to die out in the middle as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, now here's the thing. It's really kind of very dry right now. We haven't had rain for about a week, and the rain we had before that was inconsequential.
Right.
So if you're going to dig and divide and there's no rain in the forecast, I would really soak that area good.
Yeah.
So that you can dig it. And then once you divide it and you replant it, you do have to keep watering to get it to establish. It's going to grow roots. You want it to establish.
Yeah. And you want cooler temperatures. So I would say don't dig and divide perennials in August in Oklahoma because it's just really dry and hot. And I always tell people, don't go buy. That's when all the nurseries, the local nurseries, have their sales. And it's because it's hot and dry. Well, unless you're just a really good gardener and you've been doing it forever, I don't even plant stuff in August if I can help it. Occasionally, I will move something if I just am right there. And then I put the drip irrigation right on that plant, and I really water it in good.
So, Dee, you do know it's September now, right?
I do know it's September, but you know what? It's still hot in September in Oklahoma, too. Okay. Just not this year.
You should wait a little bit. So here, like Labor Day, sort of like after Labor Day, I mean, you do want to watch the temperatures. If it's going to be in the 80s or whatever, I would hold off. But, you know, you could do stuff in the early October.
Okay, so people here, it stays in the 80s until October. So go on and divide them now if you want to. In fact, we're supposed to get rain all the end of this week. So today would be a perfect day to divide your perennials in Oklahoma.
Today as in Wednesday, which is tomorrow, because we're recording this today.
Well, Wednesday it'll be raining. So today, which is Tuesday. But yes, tomorrow's Wednesday. Yeah, it'll still be a perfect day.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's move on.
So our next quote is, being different is awesome. All of those who are different or more interesting than those who are clamoring for acceptance because they follow the path. And that's Tony Hawk. And I love that. And I think he really shows that. He has a great Instagram page. And I actually follow him because I enjoy, he celebrates other people. It's not so much about Tony. It's about other people.
That is a good quote to remember. And so for the veggies, we wanted to talk about something I'm harvesting now, and that is my glass gem corn.
I love glass gem corn. I've also grown it in the past. I did not grow it this year, but it's one of my favorites. So tell what happened with your corn.
Well, a few weeks ago, you remember I picked a test ear, and it was all yellow, and I was concerned that I had gotten with glass gem corn, the seed is colors. And so it's highly unlikely that I got something mixed in, but it sounds like I got something mixed in. So I picked three more ears this weekend, and I'm pleased to report that they are beautiful colors of the rainbow. They're all colors, and they're beautiful, and I don't have to worry that all my glass gem corn is going to be yellow.
Yes. And so what are you going to do with your glass gem corn? Because it's not a sweet corn. It's really a popcorn.
It's a popcorn. I am going to just enjoy looking at it. It's really hard to get the right moisture content and get it to really pop well as popcorn. I don't know why that is.
I agree.
I might try it again. I've tried it in the past, and it's like, this ain't working.
Mine didn't pop very well either, but it sure is pretty for your table. And
I got nice long ears this time. Sometimes I get shorter ears. Ones. They're nice long ears. Now, you had suggested that maybe my yellow corn was sweet corn, and I've got to tell you, I figured out that it wasn't sweet corn. You know how I figured it out? And I didn't taste it.
How?
The raccoons didn't try to eat it.
Exactly. I was going to say, glass gem was a really easy corn for me to grow because it was the one that the raccoons could care less.
But I have this corn really got, it's almost 8 feet tall. And so I thought, I need to cut those stalks, and I don't do a lot of fall decorations out front, but maybe I'll try to do something around the light post with those stalks, because they're kind of pretty.
Yeah.
And they're just beautiful. People pay good money to buy corn stalks at the store.
Yeah, they do. So you ought to do that.
I should.
Stack them up by your front door.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But anyway, that's what we got. I mean, it's an easy corn to grow, and you start picking it now. It's a fun corn to grow with kids, even if you don't end up eating it, because really every ear is a different combination of colors. It's really pretty.
Yeah. I saved all mine. I took it off my ears when it got really dry, and then I put it in a jar, and I just put that on my shelf because I enjoyed it so much. And actually, I saved more of the colors I liked the best in case I wanted to replant it.
That's a good idea. Okay, so we have one more quote from Mr. Tony Hawk.
You want to do it, or you want me to?
I can do it. My priority was skating. I realized early on that these distractions of partying and fame are pulling you away from this activity or your skill set. I wanted to get better skating. That's what saw me through.
That was the quote that Claire and I heard on the masterclass, and I said, oh my gosh, we are going to so use this quote, because it's true. Fame and partying can take you away from many things, and skateboarding takes skill, just like becoming a good gardener takes skill. And so what we thought of for our bookshelf was, what is pulling you away from becoming a better gardener? And we also talked about, you and I ahead of time, talked about how what inspires us now as seasoned gardeners is different from what inspired us as young gardeners. So what inspired you as a young gardener that got you started?
So as a young gardener, and I've talked about this before, I checked out a book, a Rodell book called Growing Fruits and Vegetables the Organic Way. And I looked at that book for hours when I was in middle school. I was just so drawn to it. And now I couldn't really pick. I struggled picking. Now, you have a particular author that you said really inspired you.
Yeah, it was the first one that ever really inspired me was Barbara Damrosch. And the book is an unusual book. It's called Theme Gardens, and we've talked about it before way, way back in the beginning. And I saw this when I was in college, when I was living in the dorms, and it was in this little gift shop across the street. And I bought that book even though I didn't have any money, and it was themed gardens. And I thought about how I have totally come full circle again. Because one of the theme gardens that struck me was the butterfly garden, and learning that butterflies like messy gardens because they like to protect their caterpillars and themselves. And also they're more like meadows, and that's what most butterflies are interested in, is big meadow areas, adult butterflies. So I have to say that book still makes me think, and I still have it, believe it or not.
I still have theme gardens. I mean, I've had it for decades.
It's a great book. I think you can only buy it used now.
Probably.
And I feel like if people went and looked at it, they'd be like, why this book? Because it's probably showing its age, but I sure did love it.
Yeah, and I think I'm always like bright, shiny objects, those gardening books. I love them all.
I do too.
I find something in almost every single one that I really enjoy.
I find now that I'm really interested in books like Matt Mattis's vegetable book, where he's growing
yes.
something different and something I've never tried. I grew onions from seed this year, and it was easy. And that was something he suggested.
Yeah. Challenges you to do something different.
Yep. So what's our dirt, Carol?
The dirt is the Great American Lawn, and you posted a link to a, in a world turned upside down, maintaining a perfect lawn. And I did not have a chance to watch this video clip. So
it was really interesting. It was on CBS Sunday morning, and the premise was it gives people a sense of self-control. And they went and interviewed people who are really obsessed with their lawns. And most of these people were guys. As you know, guys really love lawns. I'm not a guy, and I don't know why they love their lawns, but they do. And so the interesting thing about this was, is she interviewed a guy who had turned this into his job because he lost his job due to the coronavirus. And luckily he was a lawn freak, because now he mows other people's lawns. Like, he's mowed his, when I say a lawn freak, I mean that in the nicest way. He made his lawn the shape of the American flag. You know what I mean? He mows certain ways and stuff. Yeah.
There's a guy in our neighborhood. He's older, and he mows several of the neighborhood yards because he just likes to mow. I admit I like to mow.
I don't mind mowing, and I don't think you're obsessed with your lawn, but you love to mow.
I do love to mow, but I'm not obsessed with the lawn. I don't worry about every little dandelion. I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, people see a little blade of grass out of place and they get all nervous.
And I like to mow paths in my upper pasture where my meadow is, because then I can walk down those paths and not be afraid of being around snakes or getting chiggers. And so I enjoy that because I make these designs in the upper meadow, and that's kind of fun. And it reminds me of England because they do that in England. But, you know.
But there is that sense of, you know, I'll say satisfaction, or as they say, control, where your grass is cut, the edges are sure. All trimmed, and everything looks really good. And at least that part of your world is in order. And my boss, when I used to work, I got to leave early because I got to mow the grass. And he's like, can it wait? I'm like, no, it needs to be cut.
Well, in your case, it helped you with stress at work because you were in IT.
It did help. It does help with stress. But I still laugh because there's always ends up, you know, like there's an evacuation in Florida or someplace because a hurricane is coming. And they'll always show some picture of some guy out there mowing his grass right before he evacuates because a hurricane is about to blow his house down. But at least it'll blow it down on a well-cut lawn. And he won't have to worry about mowing the grass when he gets back.
Yeah, except for he may be away 2 weeks and they'll still have to mow the grass.
Or there's a classic one of a guy that's mowing and there's like a tornado off in the distance. But the rain and tornado haven't reached him, so he's going to get his grass cut before the tornado destroys it.
So this is kind of like that. And they interviewed the people from Scott's Miracle-Gro. And they were discussing about their lawn products. I'm just going to say it. I think Scott's Miracle-Gro has done more to make lawns boring, in my opinion. But anyway, I like clover in my lawn and stuff like that. I will say we have hired a company, Bill and I did 2 weeks ago, for the first time ever to mow our lawn. We have always done it ourselves forever. And we finally hired someone because, you know, for years it didn't matter that we spent every weekend mowing our lawn, but now we just don't want to do it all the time. So we hired these great guys, and they come in and they have a standing lawnmower and a riding lawnmower, uh-huh. And they have edgers,
yeah,
and they have weed eaters, and they just zip through that lawn. I mean, they're done in an hour, and they mow about 2.5 acres. No, I have not planted 2.5 acres of grass. It's just I live in the grasslands. I live right at the edge of the two things. So
we're probably evenly split in my neighborhood. Probably half of us mow our own lawns, and then half have a lawn service. And a lot of them have the same lawn service, and you'll see the guy go from one to the other. But some of these yards aren't that big, and they'll come in with these mammoth mowers, and they leave in big wheel tracks and stuff. And I was like,
it's just crazy. Now ours are small, but I think they had a gas leak because I have a big stripe on one of the lawns. And I was like, oh,
what? That happens. Could be. That
so what's this week's garden commission? Yes.
So this week's garden commission is we're challenging ourselves to plant one perennial that blooms in the fall that would help pollinators. So we're talking about a native mm-hmm. plant. And then we'll share our favorites next week. And I need this commission, Dee. I need it.
Why?
You know why? Because I bought a perennial that blooms in the fall. And I bought it weeks ago. It's still in the pot on the porch.
Yeah, it's time to get that out of the pot. Our friend Francis would be very upset with you.
And so I thought, this is the challenge I need. I'm going to go water that area good, and then I'm going to plunk it in, and I'll tell you next week what it is.
So that's everyone's garden commission.
Yes.
If you guys plant a perennial for fall, feel free to come back here. And also, if you live in my part of the world, you can go look at my last blog post and the one I did the week before, and it was all about what you can grow in fall. So those will give you some ideas. If you're Carol's friend,
you're on your own. I got nothing down to no advice on my blog.
That is not true.
I'm just kidding. If you are in the Indiana area and you're like the Midwest and you need some help, you just email us at the Garden Angelus and we'll sort it out.
Yeah, same here. We're always willing to help.
So anyway, we want to thank everyone for listening to the Garden Angelus. If you like our podcast, please tell your friends about us and your enemies too. Tell everybody.
And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review that helps us get noticed by others. Plus, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode.
Exactly. And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the Garden Gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.